Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show, I'm sorry, I won't sing any more during the entire rest of this podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on 180 stations in the U.S., XM Channel 166, too. On Sunday, September 9th, 2012, this is episode 908. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by GoToMeeting with HD Faces from Citrix. All you need is a webcam and a click to turn your online meeting into a high-definition video conference. Meet with colleagues anywhere in the world, even from an iPad. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit gotomeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, use the promo code TECH. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or Android smartphone. Find out what your gadget's worth and get cash to upgrade to the latest iPhone at gazelle.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And it's time to talk about computers, cell phones, the internet, home theater. Our home theater guy, Scott Wilkinson's coming up at 33 past the hour. Talk about big screen TVs, surround sound, the like. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. If you want to join the conversation, I'd love to hear from you. You can ask a question. Most people do, but it doesn't have to be a question. You can make a comment. You can make a recommendation, something cool you found. Let's talk tech, anything with a chip in it. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. If you're outside the U.S. of A., you can use Skype Out or some other VoIP service to call that toll-free number, plus 1-888-827-5536, and it'll just be a free call for you. How about that? How about them apples? So Wednesday's a big day. We know that for sure now. Apple sent out invitations to the Tame Press, the folks that like Apple, not me. But I like Apple. You know, it's funny because I actually do like Apple. I've got Apple all over me. But see, all over me I've got Apple. But I'm not tame enough, apparently, to have to go to those events. That's fine because the good news is that the Tame Press, what they do is they blog the heck out of it. You know, Apple Insider's not there. 9 to 5 Mac's not there. None of the rumor blogs are there. Gizmodo's not there. Just you got to be nice to Apple, then you can go to these events. But you know what? You don't need to, because what happens is people go to the event. Apple doesn't stream it for reasons I don't really understand. They have in the past, but not recently. And it's odd because it really, I think they see it as a way to control the message, but in fact it's the exact opposite, because they've got 100 bloggers in there typing their little hearts out, taking pictures, typing what Tim Cook, Scott Forstall, Phil Schiller, the Apple executives, say about whatever it is they're announcing. And so the world knows immediately, and really it's completely out of the control of Apple. If they broadcast if the event went really south, then people would be seeing it live, and Apple doesn't like that, I guess. That's the only thing I can think of. There have been, you know, times when things haven't gone well on these events. Things, you know, crash in demos. But pretty much every other tech company streams these if there's enough interest. Most tech companies wish there were enough interest. They could stream these live. Don't know what Apple's going to announce, but I can tell you what the invitation looked like, because the blog's posted it. Everybody knows. It has a big 12 on it, which is September 12th, I guess. And then it has the shadow of the 12 is a 5. Well, that pretty much indicates it's going to be the new iPhone, the iPhone 5, we've all called it. I don't know if Apple will call it that. Maybe they will. Maybe that indicates they will. Or maybe they just mean the fifth iPhone. Is it the fifth? 3, 3G, 3GS, 4? It's the sixth. Apple apparently taking its number scheme from Microsoft, which thinks Windows 8 is the 8th Windows, but it's, what is it, Frazier? It's like the 12th. Yeah. You don't have to count them. It's okay. I believe you. There's some dispute. Oh, it's the fifth anniversary, says Paul Mack. There you go. The fifth anniversary. They announced it June 2007. So that could be it. 5 years of the iPhone. Anyway, what will it be? We don't know. But the rumor blogs. These, by the way, the rumor blogs are generally the untamed press. Those are the ones who don't get invited. The rumor blogs seem to think, and I think they're right, it will be tall and thin. A new aspect ratio, 1136 pixels high by 640 pixels wide. So roughly the same width, but more height. Another row of icons. This is in response, of course, to the big screens that everybody else is putting out. Anywhere from 4 inches to 5.5 inch screens on most of the new phones. And so Apple's responding to that. Still questions, though, lots of them. Will it have LTE, the next generation data network that Verizon and AT&T and Sprint sort of demand? If it doesn't, boy, they got a problem. So I think LTE, although Samsung's funny. Samsung said last week, I think stinging still from the losing that court case against Apple. If Apple releases a phone with LTE, we're going to sue them. They think, maybe they're right. They have some sort of LTE patents that Apple would have to violate with since they didn't license LTE from Samsung. There's a big question about whether we'll have this a technology called NFC that I like a lot. A lot of the new phones, the Google Nexus, the Samsung Galaxy 3, have NFC chips in the back of them. And NFC is based on RFID. You know when you go through the toll and you get a little thing in your windshield and it beep, beep, and it pays the toll automatically? That's using RFID, radio frequency identification. It's a passive radio device that gets it, as it goes through the field emitted at the toll booth, registers itself, says, here I am, sends a code number out, and then, of course, the tow booth can charge you. Well, you don't want to do that for electronic payments because, you know, you could walk by a store and they could charge you. That wouldn't be so good. So NFC is a modified version of this RFID that needs to be just, you know, a centimeter or so away from the receiver. So if you tap the Nexus or the Galaxy S3 against an RFID tag, it powers the circuitry in the the NFC tag. It powers the circuitry in the NFC tag. NFC tag wakes up and says, "Do this," and the phone can do a lot of things. There's a new service, for instance, that will receive receipts from the store, not charge, not pay, but receive receipts from the store, so you can kind of collate these in your phone. It could pay. McDonald's, Pete's Coffee, and others use this Google Wallet or similar services to use NFC to pay. But the question is Apple going to support it? Because if Apple doesn't, then it's hard for it to take off without the support of one of the top two phones in the marketplace. And the latest rumors are that Apple won't do it, and which wouldn't surprise me, knowing Apple. But they do have, they have this. This wallet thing, that the software that they put on the phone, that currently you just store, loyalty cards in, but you could store credit cards in it. Could be a way of payment. And it seems that Apple, it would be in their interest, business-wise, to take a little skim off of every charge you make. So we'll see about that. Battery life, we don't know. We won't know till we actually get the phone. The rumor is Apple will announce it on September 12th, and it will be available 9 days later, September 21st. And I think those rumors are pretty credible. So that's everything we know about the new iPhone. There's a couple more things. They've rearranged the case, and I think we're pretty sure of this just because these case designs start to leak out as you get closer to the ship date. They've been making this phone probably for months so that they have enough in stock to sell the millions that people will want. And two new things that might be significant. They're replacing the old Apple connector, that wide 30-pin connector that you've seen for years on iPods and iPhones. That's gone and will be replaced with not a industry standard USB connector, alas, no, but a 9-pin connector, a proprietary Apple-only 9-pin connector. So you'll need new connectors, new cables, new docks, or adapters for the old stuff. And they're also moving the headphone jack from the top, where everybody else puts it, to the bottom. just because they can. Anyway, well, that's what we know. We'll see. I have to say, it is not, you know, it's been a slam dunk since 2007 for Apple and the iPhone. The new iPhone, even the 4S, the last version of the iPhone, which people like me and many other pundits said, gee, that's not much of an improvement over the iPhone 4. That couldn't possibly be, you know, a big sell. It's the biggest iPhone ever. They just, every time, boom, 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 they're the Babe Ruth of cell phones. They just hit it out of the park every time they come to the plate. This one's not a slam dunk, to mix our sports metaphors. This might be a triple, might be a double, might be a fly out. There's a lot of competition out there. All right, your call's next. What do you think, Leo Laporte, the tech guy? Well, actually, it says 20 minutes after the hour or something like that. I think my clock's wrong. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Coming up, Scott Wilkinson, the home theater guy. We'll talk a little bit about home theater. I'm not sure what he wants to talk about. We'll find out in a minute. But first, let's get to the phones. Our first call of the day from Pleasant Hill, California, listening to News Talk 910 in San Francisco. It's Dutch on the line. Hi, Dutch. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Well, hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call. I'd like to say that I'm not a tech kind of guy. So I listened to my question is, last week I listened to your show about copying VHS tapes to DVDs.
And yeah.
About buying a Panasonic DVD recorder. And I actually did that 7 years ago in 2005, and I copied multiple tapes. And they all worked fine unless I went ahead and I stopped and then would, you know, copied bits on one DVD. Now, what happened was after finalizing them, they actually, I could play them in the DVD recorder that I put them on, the DVD player that I recorded them on, but it won't work on other DVD players.
Yeah, you made a multi-session disc, and most DVD players are not smart enough to play that back.
Actually, it was smart enough for two times, and then it didn't work out.
And then never again, huh?
Yeah. How can I?
And you did finalize it.
Yes, I did.
Normally, if you finalize it, no problem.
They will play on computers. But
yeah, yeah.
Player.
Yeah, the computers are capable of reading multi-session discs. So you can write to a disc all at once, or you can write to it in multiple sessions. In theory, when you finalize it, compiles all the sessions into a single session. Sounds like it might not have done it properly. In other words, normally you shouldn't have any trouble doing that as long as you finalize. This is a very common problem with people who don't finalize it. Then it's still in the UDF format, which is not a format that most DVD players can read. Understand, a DVD player, any DVD player, is a computer. It's just a singularly dumb computer because it's only $49.95. And so it has, you know, a very limited firmware. And there's a certain format that it's expecting. If it's not in precisely that format, it might have problems. I wonder, it's not a region. You didn't set it for anything but region one, did you?
Oh, boy. Now you're at it. I did this.
Yeah, I mean,
time ago. I don't normally able to listen to you on Sundays. I usually work, so.
I doubt you have region encoding on something that you've earned yourself. You know, this is what they do on commercial movies, commercial DVDs. They encode them for one of, I think it's eight regions, you know, South America, Asia, the United States, Canada. Yeah. So each region, we're region one in the U.S. And so when you get a new DVD player, you get a couple of chances to play back the DVD. And then you have to decide what region you're in, and then it locks it in forever.
Playback, the ones, I mean, it obviously worked because the ones that I did not stop it, they do play in other DVD players after I finalize them, but not the ones.
They play in other DVD players, and that's not that one.
Yeah, correct, actually. There's several of them that, these are all.
So is it all one in particular that it won't play on?
No, I've tried them on multiple ones.
Multiple. So it plays on some, doesn't play on others.
Nope.
And it played a couple of times on the ones it doesn't play on now.
Correct. Plays on the computer and the one that I recorded on, but not the other DVD players.
Well, I understand. I would expect it, no matter what, to play on the computer and on the one that you recorded it on. It's the standard dumb DVD player that I'm worried about. Was it a DVD RW DVD R minus DVD. Was it a multi record? What kind of, was it a DVD RAM?
My God, now you're asking me.
Yeah, so there is this kind of weird format, DVD RAM, which is basically a read write format that absolutely could confuse a normal DVD player.
Okay.
I don't, you know, I guess my answer is I don't know.
It was a DVD-R.
Plus R or minus R?
Yeah.
DVD-R is good. That's a good sign, but there were two formats. You know, it shouldn't matter. Every modern DVD, and how recent is the DVD player that you're trying to play it back in?
Oh, it's 2000. Oh, it's a DVD Blu-ray player.
Okay, so it's a modern DVD player.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, any Blu-ray player should be able to play whatever the heck you throw at it.
Yeah, but not the ones that I...
Well, there's some other issues as well. It could be that the recorder's laser was off a little bit, and it's not within the tolerance of the Blu-ray player. I don't know.
It does say disc air on it when I put it in the player.
You know what you probably would want to do, and this wouldn't harm it in any way, is take the contents of that, clone the DVD. So on your computer, take the contents of the DVD, because you can read it there, and write it again.
Okay, with what kind of program?
Oh, well, there are a lot of DVD authoring programs. I think Windows Movie Maker. You run Windows?
Yes.
Yeah, I think you can get Windows Movie Maker will burn a DVD for you, I believe. So that's free from Microsoft, get.live.com. Not the world's most wonderful program, but at least it could... or you can get a DVD cloning program. What you want to do is copy. It's, you know, a DVD is a disc with files on it. They're VOB files and VTS files, variety of different files on it. What you want to do is copy the contents of that disc onto the computer and burn it back in using an authoring program so it authors properly to another disc. And I bet you that would fix it.
I have PowerDirector 8. Sorry.
It'll work. That's a good program. That's actually, no, actually, that, I'm sorry, that's a reading program. I don't think that. Here's one the chat room's recommending, DVD Flick. Let me just look at this, make sure it'll do what you want it to do. DVDflick.net. It's a free program, which certainly recommends it, but let me make sure it's got the capabilities.
Flick.net.
DVD Flick, DVDFLICK.net. No, they say the chat room, sorry, wrong one. Simple DVD authoring tool. Yeah, what you want is just a DVD cloner tool.
Okay.
There's lots of those. In fact, if you search for DVD clone, you'll find them. And you don't have to spend a lot of money because it's not a commercial DVD, so they don't have to remove copy protection. There's clonedvd.net. I use a commercial program that's not very expensive from slysoft.com. It's designed to clone commercial DVDs. The point of cloning is I don't want to re-encode it. I want to take the files and re-burn them. Because if you re-encode it, you'll reduce the quality. So you don't want to rip it and then burn it again.
I've tried ripping it to just a regular program, like NHS Express Burn, and it came, didn't
yeah.
problem.
You're able to play it back, right?
Not on the DVD player.
Not on the player, yeah.
So that was...
I'm not really sure why. I wonder if the DVD player is funky. Can't really help you, Dutch. I'm not sure. The chat room's got all sorts of crazy ideas. PowerISO.com. I think the key is to clone it by copying the files off and then burning or creating a new disk in your PC. Chat room also says, update the firmware on the Blu-ray player. Sometimes what happens with the chat room is they have no idea. So they're throwing spaghetti at the wall. I suspect that all you have to do, that the discs you made originally in the Panasonic are slightly funky. All you have to do is copy the data off. Good news, you can still read them and make a new one. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So on my agenda today, a great program that I think you're going to like a lot that I perhaps have mentioned once or twice called Go. Have you heard of GoToMeeting? I feel guilty because sometimes I feel like maybe you've heard about this. On the other hand, I think there are probably people who haven't or have heard about it for a while and don't know that the new GoToMeeting has video in it, which is really sweet. So GoToMeeting's been around for a while. It's the program that lets you hold online meetings. And what's really sweet about it is you can hold these online meetings pretty much anywhere, from a Mac or a PC. People can join your meeting on an iPhone and an iPad, and they see your screen, or they can share their screen with you and so on. Really great way to meet. But now they've got HD faces, which means if you've got a camera on your computer, you can see them. They can see you. They can even use the camera on the iPad and the mic and the earphones on the iPad to join the meeting. That really makes a meeting a live event. It makes it something very powerful. I want you to give it a try today. Go to meeting.com. There's a 30-day free trial, and I'd like to ask, in the promo code, you type T-E-C-H, just the word tech. You'll be meeting from your iPad, from your iPhone, from your Mac or PC, anytime, anywhere, and it's just great. Here she is. There's a video. We're looking at the video. She's on the meeting in her iPhone. iPhone doesn't yet send video. I think that's just a matter of time. And by the way, the iPhone and iPad apps are free. So 30 days free. Very easy to set up a meeting using email. You see, you can just click that link, join the meeting. Same thing on the iPhone or the iPad. Send video if you're on an iPad or a desktop or a laptop, and you're in. It's just so sweet. You get free teleconferencing over phone lines, but you also have VoIP teleconferencing as well. Go to meeting.com. $50 a month for as many meetings as you want, as long as you want. Actually, $49. And the first month is free. Go to meeting.com and use the promo code TECH. Indiana, here I come. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and now in the magic window. I feel like Pee-wee's Playhouse here. Yeah. We've got Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru. Were you in Indiana?
I was, in fact, in Indianapolis, Indiana. So Kyle is right
Kyle
on
Benham
the job.
Kyle knows
there.
Everything.
He does, yes.
Amazing. How do he do it? Scott is our home theater geek. In fact, he does a show called Home Theater Geeks every Monday, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, on our podcast network. You can watch live at twit.tv or watch any of his previous shows and get his most recent show for download. I call it On Demand.
On Demand video and audio. Yes, indeed.
Twit.tv, twit.tv/HATAG. So what's up, Scott? Did you go to Cedia? Is that what you were doing?
That's what I was doing, and I wasn't here yesterday because I was actually in a cab on the way to the airport.
Well, we can forgive that. I don't want you to do the show from a cab. So
no, that would have been funky.
So tell me about Cedia. What is Cedia?
Cedia is the annual trade show put on by Cedia, which is also the name of the organization, the Custom Electronics Design and Installation Association.
Aha.
So it's for custom installers and dealers around the country come to this show, and the manufacturers of products that they use to install custom home theaters, also custom security systems and lighting control systems and home automation systems, even central vacuum cleaner systems are on the show floor. And they all walk the show floor and look at all the latest stuff that's coming down the pike.
So for Sony and for Panasonic and LG and Sharp and Samsung, this is a place they show new TVs?
Yes. However, this year we noticed a downturn in the number of exhibitors that have to do with home theater. In particular, I don't think Panasonic ever came. They might have in the early days. Sony was there, but Samsung was not. LG was not, other than in a little private room in a bar across the street.
Wow.
There were quite a few companies that weren't there today, this week, and also the traffic, the number of participants, of showgoers, people who come to see the stuff, seemed quite down to me. The aisles were pretty free and empty, and you didn't have. You remember CES, right? How crowded it is to walk around.
Well, this must be a measure of the bad economy. The people are not spending money on massive home theater systems.
I think that's true. And I think that dealers who used to send four or five people to the show now send one or two. And the booths were smaller, too. Still in all, that doesn't mean that there wasn't a bunch of really interesting stuff. For example, remember last week we were talking and I was telling you I'd heard that Sony was going to have a 4K flat panel?
Yeah. Did you see it?
I did, and it's gorgeous.
84 inches, right?
84 inches diagonally, and it's 3,840 pixels across by 2,160 pixels down.
Wow, so that's only about $1,000 a pixel. How much was it?
$25,000.
Oh, that's actually not even that bad.
It's not that bad. Yeah. Now, what was interesting was that there were no less than four companies showing their version of this same panel. It's undoubtedly sourced from LG. LG is one of the only companies that can really make such a panel.
Huh.
And so they're all LCD TVs. They're all LED edge lit, not backlit, which I was surprised at because it's such a large screen. If the LEDs are only around the edge, I can't imagine that you'd get very even light distribution throughout that really big picture.
For $25,000, put a few extra LEDs in, for crying out loud. Criminy.
Well, now that's the Sony. Also exhibiting a similar product was LG, in fact, in the bar across the street from the convention center. Let's see, JVC was showing one, and Runco was showing one.
Okay, so that's good news. I mean, I've been an advocate. I'm not as crazy about 3D as I am about 4K, which is
exactly
twice the resolution horizontally and vertically of HD, and it's super crisp, super beautiful.
Yeah.
One of the reasons this is happening, though, is because a lot of 3D TVs require 4K, right?
Well, they don't require it, no.
But they're better with it.
Exactly. They're much better with it because what it does is it allows you to use passive glasses,
right,
the inexpensive, the same kind of glasses you get in the commercial cinema.
So are all passive 3D TVs 4K?
No.
Oh.
Up till now, all passive 3D TVs have been 1080p or 1920 by 1080.
Which means they're effectively half that resolution when you watch them. They're 540p.
Correct. Each eye only gets 540p. And this is, I think, the biggest and most important application initially of 4K TVs is when you do passive 3D on them, each eye sees essentially 3840 across by 1080 up and down.
So it's real HD, even if you're in 3D.
But correct.
Will they do 4K in 2D mode?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, you just need the content.
The problem is the content.
And a way to play it.
Correct. Exactly right. Now, JVC, I mentioned this to everybody, and JVC's point was they saw my camera, for example. I carry a camera around the show, and the guy said, look, you've got a 4K source right there. You're carrying
it. Right.
So you can generate your own 4K content, of course, but I'm talking about commercial content, you know, blockbuster movies from the studios, and that is not available yet, and it's not going to be for a while.
Digital movies are often mastered in 4K,
correct,
are they not?
Correct.
So the original content is 4K. It just doesn't fit on the Blu-ray disc.
Correct.
Yeah.
Now, there is a standard of Blu-ray called BDXL, which is currently a Blu-ray rewritable
That's
format.
That's the size of pants I wear. That's interesting. Yeah. BDXL. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But that's a rewritable. That's a Blu-ray rewritable format. And it's possible that it could get turned into a ROM distribution format, but it's not yet, and it won't be for a while.
Right.
So Sony was showing custom-made 4K content, and it looked gorgeous.
Oh, I bet.
Just beautiful. Everybody else was showing, LG in particular, was showing up-converted 1080p.
How'd that look?
Well, on the LG, I was pretty disappointed.
Yeah.
In particular, they had some shots from the South Pacific, and there was like some islands and some thatched roofs, right? So very fine detail. It was alive and shimmering.
Oh, you saw the compression.
The upscaling artifacts.
Right.
They were taking 1920 by 1080, upscaling it to 3840 by 2160. And man, oh man, it was just shimmering and jittery and
Yeah, so you don't want
that. That was a problem. Now, some of the content looked fine, you know, but if you get that really super fine detail kind of stuff and you don't have a really good scaler, then it's going to be a problem.
How about broadcast? Will we see a 4K broadcast?
No, I don't think so, because it's got to fit in a certain bandwidth in order for satellite companies and cable companies to be able to offer you some number of channels. If they had to cut the number of channels they offered by a quarter, if they had to cut it by four.
They're not going
to
do that. You
know, to in order to offer 4K, they're not going to do it unless they compress the you-know-what out of it.
Right.
And then it's going to have all kinds of artifacts and problems anyway. So it's not going to be broadcast. It might be downloaded. I think there is a chance for that. I don't think streaming is likely anytime in the near term because the infrastructure isn't there. Most people don't have the bandwidth coming into their homes that would allow for a high-quality 4K stream. But you could download it onto a hard drive, say, overnight. At Digital Projection Booth, we saw the Prima movie server, which is amazing.
Scott Wilkinson, follow him on Home Theater Geeks, Monday, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern at twit.tv. Thank you, Scott.
And in her glove compartment are my songs. She hasn't even heard them since she found out what the words meant. She decided she preferred them all wrong. Kind of like the last time.
Leo LaPorte.
Really fast rhymes.
The Tech Guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. You know, while Apple's announcing a new iPhone next week, we've got new phones from everybody else this week, the week before, and in fact, HTC is going to announce new phones after the iPhone comes out. It's interesting. I think Nokia, Motorola, Samsung all thought, let's announce our phones before Apple does. I guess because they figured once the iPhone 5 comes out, nobody's going to be interested in their phones. I don't know. HTC said, why don't we wait? We'll do it after. HTC, Samsung, Nokia, all announcing not only Android phones, but also Windows 8 phones. In fact, Nokia announced a beautiful Windows 8 phone, the Lumia 920, which they mistakenly did not say availability or price or anything. Later, realizing what a mistake they made, they leaked that it would be November 1st on AT&T. But I have some question about that. Nokia really fumbled this announcement. They released an ad that's touting the new camera, which should be a very good camera, by the way. Probably best camera phone, or should be, spec-wise, the best camera phone on the market. They call it Pure View, more than 8 megapixels, but also optical image stabilization and very, very good low-light performance. Unfortunately, the video's not working, and they released a television ad with faked video. And it was quickly outed because it was obvious. You could actually, if you look closely at the video, see the camera operator shooting the video with a real camera, not a phone. Then it came out even the pictures were fake. So a little bit of an embarrassment for Nokia. They tried to make it up by going to tech blog The Verge and saying, hey, look, here's a camera, take pictures, same picture that's on the TV, but don't do video, it's not ready, which means the phone is not done, which means I don't see how they make a November 1st release date, but that's what they're rumored to be doing. In fact, features of the camera in general weren't done, and they wouldn't let them run applications. When they announced the phone, they wouldn't let anybody touch it. My colleague Mary Jo Foley, who does our Windows Weekly podcast, was at the Nokia announcement. She said, "Can I hold it?" They said, "You can hold it, but you may not press any buttons or tap any icons. Just hold it in your open palm of your hand, just to see the weight." So this phone is not done. And I don't know if I blame Nokia. I might blame Microsoft because, you know, Microsoft has not yet released what they call the SDK, the software development kit for Windows Phone 8. That's what developers need to start writing software for, which means developers can't write apps for it yet. So, unfortunately, Windows Phone 8, which was a very impressive product, once again, too late to the game. Microsoft was too late to the game with Windows Phone 7. Everybody had already decided what they wanted to use. Same thing's going to happen. You know, the iPhone 5 will be out. All these other new Android phones will be out. Windows Phone 8 late to the table once again. Verizon does say they are talking with Nokia and others, but it looks like AT&T to be the partner for this one. And Samsung announced the new Note, the Galaxy Note, which is 5.5-inch screen. They did announce the Ative, which is a Windows Phone 8 series of phones, as well as Windows 8 and Windows RT tablets. Motorola which is now owned by Google, announced some, in my opinion, very unimpressive Droid updates, the Macs and the HDs. I think it's iPhone's got a shot. iPhone's got a shot. But Samsung's coming on strong. You know, we'll see what happens with Nokia. And BlackBerry, forget it. 8888, ask Leo. Back to the phones we go to Bakersfield, California. Neil, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Neil.
How are you doing, Leo?
I am well. How are you?
Not too bad. Not too bad. I have a question. I have a. I'm a Sprint carrier, and I have a Samsung Epic. And
okay.
What I would like to do is I have a rather large database on my flash drive that's mostly PDFs and JPEGs, and I'd like to connect that to my phone so that I can read the files. I don't need to be able to write to it or transfer, but I'd just like to read it. Is that possible to do?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, you know, what I would do with the JPEGs, which are pure images, is I'd use Picasa Web, which is a free photo service from Google. You've already, I presume, because it's an Android phone, tied your phone to your Google account.
Yes.
And Picasa Web is just, you have an account because you have a Google account. So it will just pick those images up and put them in the gallery, and you'll be able to see them.
So it's just a matter of connecting the flash drive to the USB port on the top of the phone?
No, do you have a computer? You want to put them on the phone?
I want to plug my flash drive into the phone, and
you don't have a computer.
Flash drive. Yeah, I don't want to use a computer to do that.
I see. No, you can't do it because the way USB is, it has to have. It's kind of it's not peer to peer. It's, I wish there were a better phrase for this, master slave. You need a smart CPU and a USB device. And unfortunately, the way these phones work is they're dumb USB devices. They show up as a disk. So in effect, you'd be trying to connect two disks together. I wonder if there's a cable. Okay. So some Android phones. I don't think the Epic will do this, but some Android phones will do a host mode. Better than master slave would be host client. Let's use that phrase. So you need to be able to get your Android phone in a host mode instead of a disk mode.
Well,
I don't think the Epic could do that.
To the Galaxy 3S, would that phone do it?
Probably, yeah. You don't want to in any way take, for security reasons, you don't ever want to take this USB card and put it on a computer in any way.
Well,
because another way you could do this is to connect the phone to the computer. Put the USB card in the computer, mount the phone as a disk, and then just copy them over.
Well, yeah, but it's very large.
I don't understand. It's very large. Will it fit on the phone? Oh, I see. You don't want to copy it to the phone. You want to look at it on a USB card.
Right. Right. If I could do that, I could then just look at my 500 gig external hard drive as well. I mean,
you want to use, in effect, you want to have an external hard drive for your phone.
Right.
Okay. I don't know. I'm gonna do some research, Neil. Keep listening. I have no idea how to do that. I've never heard of doing that. So there might be some specialized. If there were a specialized cable, you might be able to do that. But as far as I know, you cannot use an external drive on a smartphone. But let me look. Hey, they are smart, right? What you're trying to do is what makes perfect sense, which is use it like a computer. Your smartphone practically is a computer these days, isn't it? But let me look. He's got an Epic from a Sprint, which is an older, like the S1. And he's thinking about getting a Galaxy S3. So chat room, help me figure out a way to basically mount an external hard drive on his smartphone. Well, they're going to work on that. They're going to work on that. And as soon as they come back with an answer, I'll fill you in. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. And it's time to talk about computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, home theater, and all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, 888-827-5536. No need to shout at me across the radio. You just call 888-ASK. Leo, so thank you to the chat room. I think we worked out our last caller's conundrum. He has a Epic, which is a, I think it's a, that's what Galaxy S1 is called on the Sprint network. The S2 is the Epic Touch 4G. they've got to do something about these names. They're just out of control. And what he wanted to do is kind of unusual, but in fact is doable, not on that phone, unfortunately. I don't think it's on that phone. What he wanted to do is have, he's got files on a USB drive, a little thumb drive. He wants to connect it to the phone, just like the phone, as if the phone were a computer. But, it, you know, it is. But what he there's two ways a smartphone can handle a USB connection. It can either be USB host mode or USB disk mode. Almost all phones will do disk mode, which means that if you connect it to your computer, it'll show up as a disk drive on your computer. That's disk mode. And perhaps if you've tried connecting an Android phone to your computer, you've noticed a little pop-up that says, you know, I'm connected to a computer. Do you want me to be in disk mode? And you say yes. And now you can copy files to the phone as if it were an external disk on your computer. But there's the other side of it, which is called host mode. In USB, there always is a host and a disk. It has to have a smart device on one end and a dumb device on the other end. Now, your phone is a smart device, but it has to have the right drivers and so forth. So the USB host mode is not available on all Android phones. I've put a link in the show notes at techguylabs.com to an article on XDA developers that talks about how to find out if your phone can do host mode. Generally, it's newer Android phones that have that capability. The Galaxy S3 for sure. The Galaxy Note. For sure. The S2, I think so, yes. So the Epic Touch 4G should do that. You also need a special cable. You need a cable that has the standard mini 6-pin USB connector on one end and a USB adapter on the other end that you could plug the thumb drive into. And if you've got that, if you've got the capability, and all newer Android devices do, it might be Fraser, who's in here in our audience, thinks it might be dependent on the version of Android. He thinks it might be Honeycomb or later. So that'd be Honeycomb, Ice Cream Sandwich, or Jelly Bean. You can get this cable for about 85 cents on Amazon. It's just called a USB host cable. It plugs into your phone. You plug the thumb drive into it. And you go into host mode, and you're good to go. Then you should be able to, with the proper software, open up the JPEG or the PDF and read it. There are PDF readers for Android that are free, and PDF is a good one. And you should be able to go and read. So there you go. Thank you, chat room, for helping me out on that. If you want to get in the chat room, please do. It's easy. Just go to techguylabs.com. That's our website. Show notes are there. James DeRuvo's scribbling as we talk. Josh Windisch, who's in charge of the website, then polishes it up. In fact, if you look, there's 907 previous shows. You can go back in time to 2004. I don't know why you'd want to. You can hear what the problems were like 8 years ago. But you can also go back to previous shows. And what I love now, what we're able to do is we put a video, a YouTube video of the show. If you go to an individual question, the video jumps right to that point. And you can actually hear the question, hear my answer, and then, and this is the part I like on the Tech Guy Labs site, you can comment, you can add your thoughts. So I know a lot of you are sitting in the chat room and saying, oh, hey, what about, and you can do that. And I'd appreciate it if you do it, or if you just want to read, you can thumbs up or thumbs down answers. So the idea being the answers with the most thumbs up will rise to the top. And when people go to the website, they'll get additional information vetted by you, the smart folks in the Tech Guy audience. TechGuyLabs.com, also link to the chat room there. Chat room's very handy because they are live and responsive. Jewel is in Burbank, California. Our next caller listening on the mothership, KFI in Los Angeles. Hi, Jewel.
Hi. Okay, so this is, I can't get into my computer. I can't get it to open up. It starts out, I see the Windows logo, yep. And then it goes a flash of blue, and then it shuts down, and it blah, blah, blah. And then I get this thing, it says, "We apologize for the inconvenience, but Windows did not start successfully." A recent...
I like the apology.
Yeah, isn't that great? We apologize, but we're not working.
We are so sorry.
And so anyway, I got three screens here. I took my camera and I photographed the screens because there's a bunch of information on there that I don't understand.
Do they ask you to go to a website and download some special software?
No.
Whew, okay. Because this is a very kind of lousy ploy that lately with malware is that they hijack your machine, they lock it, and they say, "But we can fix it. Send us $49.95 and we'll fix it." I've never seen it. But I've never seen an apology from Microsoft for not being able to start.
Well, it's Windows.
Yeah, Microsoft makes Windows. I've never seen that. So I'm puzzled by this. "We apologize for the inconvenience."
Now, what it says is a recent hardware or software change might have caused this. Well, I didn't enter anything recently at all. There's nothing.
But software can change by accident, you know. I mean, things can go bad on the hard drive and stuff. Mm. So the first thing to try is boot into safe mode. Do you know about that?
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things that they suggest on the screen.
Yeah.
Safe mode with networking, safe mode with... Mm-hmm. I tried all that, and I still got the same cycle of screens over again.
So that's not good. Safe mode, what safe mode does, it loads kind of the minimal set of windows to get you in there so you can fix the problem. But if you can't even do that, oh boy.
No, it just doesn't.
Oh boy. So a lot of different things could have happened. Your motherboard could have a bad chip on it. Your RAM chips could be bad. Your video card, something significant, or most likely, it almost always is, your hard drive is having a problem. And so Windows can kind of start up, but not really. It gets to a certain point and then something big crashes. So my suggestion at this point, do you have your Windows recovery disks lying around?
You know, I probably do. It's been years. I have XP, so you know how long ago it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, there is two things that puzzled me on here. On the bottom of the one screen that comes up, it's Energy Star. It's like a...
Yeah, that's the boot screen or the splash screen.
Okay. On the bottom, it says press DEL to enter setup.
Right.
Now, I don't know. There's no... On my...
Don't worry about that. That's not going to help you.
Okay. Well, I don't even know what that means.
That's what we call BIOS setup. And sometimes people call me and say, "Hey, you know, I can't... Something's not working right." And I'll invite you to do that. And when you get into the BIOS setup, there's settings you can change. But in this case, I don't think it's going to help you. The only thing on that screen you might want to look for is see... That screen, it says Energy Star, and then it'll say which devices the computer can see, and see if it can see your hard drive. It'll say disk 0, disk 1, and see if it can see your hard drive. If there are any CD-ROMs or DVDs, it'll see those as well. If it can't see your hard drive, then that's a fairly catastrophic failure. But I don't think that's the case. I think it can see your hard drive, but you have corrupted system files on it. Your Windows is damaged, and this is Windows saying... I can't start up. In fact, I know it isn't your hard drive because you're getting the safe boot, your safe mode options. So that means Windows got to a certain point but can't get any farther.
Mm-hmm.
Now so you're definitely okay in terms of hardware. I think you're all right there. I think your hard drive either has corrupted or failed.
Mm-hmm.
So what you'll want to do is restore Windows. Now,
okay.
Hang on, because there's some caveats here, and I've got to go to a commercial. But hang on, I'll talk about this in just a second. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Nice, cheerful music to cheer Jewel up.
Hello?
Poor Jewel. Her hard drive.
Okay.
Yes, I'm here, Jewel.
Okay.
I think her hard drive crashed, but we're not sure. For some reason, Windows won't boot up. You know, it turns out that apology message is Microsoft.
Ah.
It does apologize to you.
How do you like that?
How do you like them apples?
I can't hear you too well.
I'm sorry. I'll shout.
Okay, no.
You're all the way in Burbank. I'm here in Northern California. I'll just shout. So I think what we want to do, the reason I didn't want to hang up on you is because I want to make sure that you back up your data, okay?
I do. I have it backed up. I'm not worried about that. I'm just
great.
I can use.
And if you're willing to erase the disk and restart, that's probably your best bet. If you can find the disks that came with that computer,
okay.
Just there'll be recovery disks. It'll say recovery disks. Just run them. And make sure when you do the recovery, you wipe the disk, you erase it completely, and start over. Now, the first thing you're going to do before you do anything else, you're going to get on the internet and you're going to download all the Windows updates. And that's going to be quite a bit because you have XP. You're probably going to get Service Pack 3 and then updates after that to get it all the way up to the current. Otherwise, it's dangerous to be online.
Right. I already did that as they came up, but now I have to do it all over again, huh?
You have to do it all over again. You know, it's not a bad thing. I do this every few months because it makes everything run faster. You'll notice a speed improvement.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if it doesn't fix it, then either the hard drive's bad, or there's a more serious problem, a hardware problem, which, and I'd hate to see that, but, you know, hard drive failures are 9 times out of 10 the cause of these problems. And it doesn't mean the hard drive itself is bad. It might just be that there's a critical area of the hard drive that can't be read, and that's the Windows boot stuff. So Windows churns along and all of a sudden gets to this key file and it goes, and it can't go any farther. And I know it's a key file because you can't even start in safe mode.
Yeah.
You can't. Windows cannot start in any form. So that means it's, you know, it's the kernel. It's something really critical. You could try. I mean, if you have a full Windows install disk, there is a repair mode. You can go through the disk as if you're going to install it, and at one point, almost right to the point where you're going to install it, you'll see a repair a Windows XP installation. It'll say welcome to setup. To repair a Windows XP installation, using Recovery Console, press R. But this is a lot of work. You do a check disk to check the drive. It's just a pain. I would just say reinstall.
Okay, so now I have two things here. I'm looking at this picture that I took, and this, maybe if I've seen this before, it says PRI, I guess it means Primary Master Disk HDD, and then it says SMART with the SM.
Yep, that's your boot drive, yep.
Capability, disabled.
Yep, disabled.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would affect Windows.
I just looked so much stuff.
That's your boot drive.
See that? And I see,
yeah.
Okay, so that means that's what you're...
I'd get a new drive. You could probably bring this into the shop. Or if you feel comfortable... Is it a desktop or laptop?
Desktop.
Yeah. If you feel ambitious, Jewel, you can go to a computer store, get a replacement drive, put it in, then do that Windows install, and you'll be good to go. It sounds like the drive's not happy.
Okay, replacement drive. How much does that cost? Do you have any idea what?
Oh, it's cheap.
Oh.
On an older machine like that, you know, we're $50, $75.
Okay, great.
But I would try before you do anything else. I'd try the recovery disks.
Okay.
All right, and make sure your backup is good because that if that's you know you don't want to lose any data and that's on the hard drive, so the recovery will erase that.
Right. Okay. Now, one question. This might sound a little bit way off, but I had an internet provider that I had a real bad problem with, and I dumped.
Oh boy.
I went to DSL Extreme. They couldn't have messed up.
No.
They?
No, no. This is really, Jewel, this is really common. It's just a hard drive failure.
Okay.
It's not a big deal. And in fact, the disabled, I think the chat room's right, that they're saying, you know, the disabled probably applies to the smart stuff, not to the drive itself. That's confusing, that message. Primary drive, smart, disabled. Doesn't mean the drive's disabled. It means smart, which is a useless technology that's supposed to tell you ahead of time before the drive fails. It almost never does, as you noticed, is disabled. Even if it were enabled, you would never have noticed. So, I think smart is kind of not that useful. It's not so smart, as they say. So, Jewel, just reinstall Windows. If you continue to have problems, then you want to bring the computer into the shop. They can test the memory if there's a memory problem, the motherboard. But almost 9 times out of 10, maybe 99 times out of 100, it's a bad sector on the hard drive. These things, if you think about your hard drive, that computer is what, 8 years old, 9 years old? That hard drive has been spinning since 2003 or four has been spinning at 7,500 rotations a minute. Somebody do the math. How many rotations is that? That thing is probably just tired. Steve in Nashville, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Here's my situation. I'm blind, and I have an iPhone 4 and the iPad 3. And
good accessibility on both of those, I'm told.
Exactly. Yeah, VoiceOver is
great.
It's great.
Yeah.
Here's the situation. 3 weeks ago, my credit card number was stolen and used to do all sorts of online purchases. Got that resolved with the credit card company.
Good.
Yep, logged into my Apple ID thing, changed my credit card number, changed my password first thing, did all that.
Good.
Yep, Apple ID account disabled. So I called AppleCare. They said, oh, well, we can't fix this. You need to go to your nearest Apple store. I'm like, so, okay, I pay for transportation. I go to the Apple store, talk to a genius. They mess with it. I'm in there about an hour. They can't do anything. They said, well, we'll send an email to the iTunes people, and they can fix it. Well, I got an email this morning at 5:30 from someone at iTunes account management saying there's nothing they can do right now. They don't know what the problem is. They can't re-enable it. It's under investigation. And so sorry for the inconvenience. So
that's annoying.
Yeah, I don't understand why, if you know everything's been changed, what's the problem?
I don't know. And, you know, no one knows. Apple obviously doesn't even know. This is in their great infinite wisdom. That's something some automated thing. Credit card fraud, a big problem. It's really a big problem in the iTunes store. So I suspect what happened is that they disabled that, seeing something they thought was suspicious activity or just the fact that you try to change a credit card caused them to disable it. They will get back to you.
Okay.
My experience has been that...
Special number to call that.
Well, I mean, if you don't hear from them in a day or two, I would email or write Tim Cook, the CEO. I've said this many times on the show. Most companies, and I know Apple does this, have an office of the CEO staffed by 30 people who sit there and do nothing but answer emails to the CEO. It's one way to escalate it.
Yeah, well,
I think that this is going to be resolved. This is just fraud protection, basically.
Yeah, because it obviously I can't update any of my apps. I can't do anything. In fact, I was going.
Yeah, it's very frustrating. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I understand, Steve. I can't help you, but there is no magic number. But my experience has been that they will fix it eventually. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I told the story yesterday on the show of my credit card fraud experience. It's happening more and more. And companies like Apple and anybody who uses credit cards are becoming just very cautious. And if there is a change to your credit card number, maybe they will disable the account for a period of time to make sure that that was legitimate, to have time to email you and so forth. You'll see there'll be an email from Apple saying your information was changed. If this is a problem, call us immediately. It becomes such an out-of-control system. And hackers have just gotten so good at stealing credit cards that, unfortunately, people have to do that. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. Steve in Mill Valley. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. Welcome.
We've actually met a couple times before when you were talking at the Golden Gate.
Oh, it's this Steve. Hi, Steve. Yeah, Golden Gate Computer Society.
Yes. Anyway.
Yeah.
I have a simple task that's driving me nuts. I had an iPad for a while, so I know a little bit about how it works. But I'm trying to transfer a video file, it's MP4, from my Windows computer to a friend's iPad 2.
Right. So the best way to do this is to import it into iTunes.
Exactly.
So, and then iTunes will not copy it to the iPad unless it's a compatible file. There's MP4s and there's MP4s. In theory, you know, the iPad should be able to play it, but that's not the case. There's a variety of ways an MP4 can be encoded, and some of them are not compatible.
Well, I don't know if that's a problem yet or not because I haven't got into it yet. But I did use Handbrake to do the encoding. Anyway, so...
And did you choose from Handbrake, did you choose iPad as the output?
iPad preset.
Good. So you should be good, golden there.
Okay. But here's the issue. I put the cable into the computer. It opens up iTunes. I drag the file from Windows Explorer into iTunes. Does it make any difference whether I have it click on the TV tab or the movies tab in iTunes?
No, it should put it in the right spot automatically.
Okay. Then I get a message saying, do you want to erase the library because iTunes can only sync up with one computer?
Right. So here's the problem. That iPad's never is not attached to your computer. It's attached to somebody else's.
And I don't know whether that means it's going to delete some pointers.
It is. It's going to start all over again. Yeah, don't say no.
I did.
Do not erase and sync. So syncing is not how you're going to get that file onto the iPad. One way to do it would be give the guy the file and have him put it on the iTunes that was originally attached to that iPad. The way this is a kind of a poor man and a very poor man's form of copy protection that Apple's employing. You can only attach an iDevice to one and one only computer at any given time. The idea being if you attached it to, you know, if your friend brought it to Steve's computer and attached it, he could copy all his files over to your computer and you wouldn't want that, would you?
Okay, so I need to bring, say, a flash drive to his computer and then do it from there.
That'd be the easiest. You can also, I think you can, he could check the box on his iPad on his iTunes that says manage this iPad manually. And if he does do that, then I do believe that he could then connect it to your computer and you could drag it right to his iPad. Not to your library, but right to his iPad. But he has to turn on manage manually.
Okay.
And he has to do that from his computer.
Oh, from his computer.
Yeah.
He's got to link it up to his computer.
You can't change, just like you can't copy files over to his iPad, you can't change the settings on his iPad. He has to change the settings from his computer, the one that it was originally synced to. Say manage manually, it's in the settings, and then I think, I'm pretty sure he could then bring it over and you could just copy it over.
Okay.
Now there are other ways, there's, you know, app, Wi-Fi apps and so forth to transfer it, but this is the simplest way to do it.
Okay. Now, I have one other question, if you don't mind.
Sure.
It's more of a, I don't really expect an answer, but maybe you can shed some light on the issue. I have a phone which I took to Europe a couple years ago and had it unlocked prior to that, and it worked fine using a local SIM card over there. Last May, I went over there again, and it was locked at this point.
So what?
Locked, yes.
What? The phone was unlocked, and then it became locked.
Yes, and I called Level 2 at Motorola and T-Mobile. They both said your phone gets relocked when it goes back into the U.S., and you put our card back in it.
I never heard of that. That stinks.
Crazy.
Was it originally an unlocked phone?
No, it was a locked phone from T-Mobile originally, but they gave me the unlock code.
Ah, I see. And, well, ask them to unlock it again.
Well, yeah, I did. I have a new code. But
that's very annoying.
I can't get to the point where it says enter the code here. It says call a service provider. So anyway, I'm working.
Yeah.
With T-Mobile,
yeah,
I don't, on
that. There's no generally there's no setting to unlock a phone. Usually there's a very complicated sequence of numbers and characters that you have to enter in there as if you're dialing them, you know, pound star 339 star star pound pound. You enter that as if you're dialing it and then it unlocks it. If what you have, if the code you have looks like that, try that. Just try dialing it in the dialer. And often that will, well, that's how they unlock it.
Okay, but this is, I guess, an unusual situation then.
No, actually it's not. Because the phone, you bought the phone subsidized from T-Mobile.
Right.
That's why they lock it, right? They gave you a deal on the phone, but they expect 2 years of your absolute undying loyalty. And failing that, they're going to charge you. I've never heard, by the way, I don't know how they get away with this. What if a dry cleaner said, well, I'm going to give you a bag, but you may not use this bag with another cleaner. I'm going to charge you $175. Seems to me that would be kind of evil. But for some reason, the cell phone companies get away with this. Now, the law requires them, after a certain period of time, after you've kind of amortized out the cost of that phone, to unlock it. But I have a feeling that there's a little loophole that you just discovered that says they can relock it if something, some event happens. So the best thing to do is, next time, Steve, just get an unlocked phone. It won't be subsidized. That's what I do. I buy my phones unlocked. They won't be subsidized, but you could put your T-Mobile SIM in it and use it. And then when you go to Europe, you take the SIM out, put another one in. It's never locked. But having a locked phone at one point, apparently there's a loophole that allows them to relock it, which is pretty bad.
Okay. Well, I appreciate
Okay, Steve. Hey, one more tip that, and a good point from the chat room. There is a program, you know it, I'm sure, called Dropbox.
Oh, yeah.
You can get, I think, 2 or 5 gigs free. I can't remember what the current free standard is. There is a Dropbox app for the iPad. So another way you could do this is just put it on a Dropbox and then tell your friend, you know, put Dropbox on your iPad and the file will be at this location.
Okay, that sounds great.
That's probably an easier way to do it than having him unlock and unmanage and all that. Dropbox is a nice feature. That's a nice feature, Dropbox. Thank you, Steve. Great to talk to you again. I got to make another trip down to the Golden Gate Computer Society. Great, one of the great long-time user groups. They've been around a long, long time. We still need them, got to tell you. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536. We put links to everything I mentioned in the show notes on our website, techguylabs.com. Hi there, if you would like more information or to join our chat or to call. It's all on the page, techguylabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, there is a new iPhone coming. I think we can basically assume that since that 5 shadow. So maybe now, before it comes out, is the time to get a quote for your old iPhone. Are you going to upgrade? Well, if you are, or you maybe want to change to another phone, you ought to know about Gazelle.com. Gazelle is the place to bring your old gadgets, whether it's iPhones, phones from HTC, Samsung, Motorola, Nokia, BlackBerry RIMs, iPads, iPods, MacBooks, or iMacs, and get the right price. Let's say, oh, I got an iPhone 4S. It's time for me to get a quote here. These quotes are good for 30 days, so get it now. $280 for an average quality iPhone 4S. That pays for your new iPhone, doesn't it? That's a good deal. They pay the postage, throw it in a box, throw everything else in the box. Anything worth more than a buck, they will pay the postage. Then they send you a check or a PayPal or, and this would be my recommendation, an Amazon gift card because they add 5%. Get the offer, good for 30 days from Gazelle.com. And then if when the new iPhone comes out on Wednesday, you say, hey, I want it. You could take advantage of that quote. I could tell you one thing. The price is not going up on the old iPhone. I'm pretty convinced. History tells us. Look, they even take iPhone classics. In fact, they'll even take broken iPhones. They won't give you as much. Let's just see. If I had a 4S on AT&T and it was 32 gigs, but it's broken, $95 for a broken phone. If it's in good condition, $280. Flawless condition, $295 plus add 5% for your Amazon credit. That's pretty good. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E, gazelle.com. There could only be one thing left. I know we deserve the best. A sense of entitlement beats the rest, because it's the first word, and we know it to be true. The first ones with a new iPhone can hold it over you. Life will be better with an iPhone 5. When it's only the iPhone 5 song. Wow. When it's kept you up at night. It's a first world problem. I have the old iPhone, and I feel so inadequate. It is truly, is it not amazing at the press, the attention, the buzz that Apple is able to get? Once a year, they put out a part of this success is that this is the very fact that they only do this but once a year. It's like Santa Claus. Once a year, they put out a new iPhone, and the whole world is going crazy. Crazy. Talking about the new iPhone. In fact, I just was looking at a Mac Rumors post. So Apple does its announcements at the Herba Buena Center in San Francisco. And they already, as always, they've already put the stuff up, you know, on the center. They've got a rainbow of curtains with an Apple logo on it. The workers have already put it there. This is the hall where they'll have the event at the Herba Buena Gardens. And somebody on Mac Rumors, this is how overheated this stuff is, has looked at the colors on either side of the Apple on the curtains and has observed that it matches. In fact, if you squish it down a little bit, it matches the colors and the pattern of the icons on an iPhone. Rooster Nugget pointed this out in the forums at MacRumors.com. But there's a mystery icon. Ooh. You know, I suppose Apple might have done that. I guess they did. I mean, how could they have done that by accident? It's pretty, it'd be a wild coincidence if they did that by accident. So is there a secret message hidden in there? Who cares? I'm not going to fall for that. But it does begin 10 a.m. Pacific's time on Wednesday. You know, it's funny. We do on my, I have a podcast network. We do live audio and video, and we do other events. We did the Amazon event this week. Amazon announced new Kindle Fires and, you know, some pretty cool stuff. In fact, some very competitive stuff with Apple's iPad at, you know, really low prices and all that. And we get, you know, a few thousand, maybe 5,000 people will watch the live stream that we do of the event. They want to know what's going on there at the office or whatever. Typically for Apple events, we will get 50, 60, 70,000 people watching live. In fact, for the iPad One event, we had 180,000 people at one time watching this live stream. Because Apple doesn't broadcast it in any way. So I'm going to do it again Wednesday, 10 o'clock in the morning, Pacific time. That's 1 p.m. Eastern on twit.tv. You're welcome to watch live. I will sit there with my commentators, my colleagues, Tom Merritt, Sarah Lane, Iaz Akhtarn. We will be reading the live blogs just like everybody else, you know, kind of collating the information. We will do something a little different, though, because we can't get a live stream from Apple. I've commissioned a Tim Cook puppet. And so Brian Hogg, who's a really talented puppeteer up in Toronto, is making a Tim Cook puppet. We're going to have, we'll basically, as we do it, we can't show you the live stream. That would be wrong. But we will show you the puppet reenactment of the live stream so that you can see what Apple's announcing as close as possible. I'm not going to mock Tim Cook. No, we can't show it. So we'll. You know, it's like the old days of baseball. Remember, in fact, Walter Cronkite got to start doing this. He'd sit there with a wire report from a baseball game. This is before they had the capability of, you know, of I guess, long line telephone broadcasts. So he'd have the ticker tape coming across, and he'd sit there and he'd reenact it. Babe Ruth comes to the plate. He's standing there. He points to center field. The pitcher pitches. The crowd goes wild. So that's all we're going to do. It's just in the great tradition, the great broadcast tradition of reenactments. We're just going to do it with puppets. Garland, Washington, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Garland.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling. Ronald Reagan used to do that, too. President Reagan, in his early days as a broadcaster, reenacted baseball games. That's right.
Right.
So what can I do for you, Garland?
I have a question. I've been looking for something to convert my old LPs and 45s and cassette tapes and preserve them so I can use them and play them on CDs.
And a lot of ways to skin that cat.
Yeah, I went through several different places and looked at different things, and I found one on the internet, DAC.com, DAC Industries.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you have any.
Yeah, I'm familiar with them, and they're very inexpensive. They make USB devices, that digital analog converter, that's what DAC stands for.
The whole thing over into computers, so.
Yeah.
And you're asking,
do you remember Crosley Radios?
Oh, yes, way back.
So somebody apparently has bought the Crosley name, and they actually make some really cool stuff. for exactly this purpose. If you go to Crosley Radio, C-R-O-S-L-E-Y. Now, I don't know if you want this or not, but they make is they make turntables and cassette players. They look like the old school wooden Crosley radios, but they have CD burners in them.
Oh.
And you can actually, I see these every time I go to the trade shows. I think they're really, really cute. You can actually put an album. Do you have albums or cassettes you want to convert?
I have LP albums and cassette tapes.
Yeah. Okay, so they make a device that just has a turntable, but they also make a device that has a turntable and a cassette. Mm-hmm. And in that device, which is a beautiful-looking turntable, you know, kind of harkens back to the old Crosleys, in fact, with wood cases and everything. They also have a CD burner, so you put the record on, you'll drop the needle, you'll press record, and it'll just transfer it over. Now, there are less expensive ways to do this, obviously. But I think this is, I mean, it's just kind of fun. Here's one, the CR-248 Songwriter. Now, it's expensive. It's $350, but it's beautiful. It's an oak or cherry wood, and it has a cassette player on the side. It's got a CD burner in it. It has a turntable. It's really a work of art. Now, that the other way to go is exactly buy, you know, there are a lot of companies. Ion also makes USB turntables. Do you have a computer?
Yes, I have a computer, and I have a stereo turntable with a three-speed on it also.
Ah, well, if you already have the turntable and you already have the computer, it's actually pretty simple. You can go down to Radio Shack or anywhere. What you need is an amplifier that will take the turntable out. Because a turntable, you know, has an unusual output. It's not a line level or mic level. It's a turntable level output. It needs a ground. It's unbalanced. So you'll need a little device. You can go, and if you ask the Radio Shack guy, I'll give it. It wouldn't cost you more than $50. And then that puts it into a mini jack that you plug into your sound card on the computer, because the sound card is a DAC. It takes an analog input and converts it to bits. That's what a sound card does.
Right.
Or vice versa, right? So you can plug that little device that's attached to your turntable in. You can't plug a turntable directly into the sound card. You need something that balances it. Mm-hmm. And it will. You plug it into the sound card, and then you'll just record the output of the sound card. There's free programs like Audacity that will do that.
Uh-huh.
And it's very straightforward. So there are really lots of ways to do what you want to do. You don't want, I think probably spend $350 on this is silly, because you already have the turntable, you already have the computer. This would be good for somebody who didn't have a computer or a turntable.
Or something simple that I just plug in and
yeah. It
would go. And I've looked at all their literature on this thing, and it seems to be that probably is
it. That's it. Yep, DAC will do it.
That will do it.
Yep.
It's good to know. So
it's exactly what, it, you know, it makes it even easier, because you don't have to use your sound card. And usually that gives you better results, frankly.
Right. Okay, that sounds very good to me. And it would be satisfactory with what I want to do. And
You could also get a preamp and plug the turntable into the preamp, plug the preamp into your computer.
Yeah, it has a mixer and a preamp also on this thing.
Yeah, you need a preamp for the turntable. The turntable's not giving you a level that you can use.
Right, you plug into that and flows things through their little gadget here.
Exactly.
Computer and somewhere ready.
Yep. It's USB, and then the computer just records it. They'll probably give you some software. I bet you they'll give you Audacity.
Software, too, yeah, they don't have
yep,
it.
Yep,
load, yeah.
Yep.
Okay, well, I just wanted to check and see if you had any information on it. And
that's it.
Sounds good to me, and the price on it is pretty reasonable, too. So
yeah.
Package.
Well, have fun, Garland. It's going to be. It's nice to nice to save those records. Don't throw them out, though. The turntable's coming back. There are lots. How do you think I'm joking? No, there are lots of people who say there's no sound better than the turntable sound, that because it's analog, right? I mean, if you think about it, it's as close as you can get to the actual performance, because the performer, you know, Chuck Mangione, played his trumpet into the microphone, which made a needle jiggle on a wax platter, which then was mastered. That's as close as you can get. It's all analog, baby. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, a good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. And it's time to talk about computers and the internet, cell phones and cameras, home theater, anything with a chip in it. 8888, ask Leo. That's the number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, you want to talk tech with me, I'd love to talk tech with you. Boy, we are in the exciting time now for people who love gadgets. This week, new gadgets from Nokia, from Amazon, from Samsung. Next week, Wednesday, this week, I guess I should say, this coming week, new gadget from Apple, we presume the iPhone 5. Some rumors, at Mac Rumors, some folks are saying that there'll be no iPods on Wednesday. That's possible, although it seems unlikely. It seems more like Apple would do that in a separate event with a new iPad mini, because we do believe there'll be an iPad, 7.8-inch iPad as well. Possible Apple will jam it all together in the announcement on Wednesday. Most Apple watchers, especially the well-connected ones like John Gruber and Jim Dalrymple of The Loop, think it'll be in October. So we'll see. But the big announcement, in my opinion, this week was from Amazon. Five new Kindles. The Kindle Paperwhite, which is an e-ink Kindle with a higher contrast screen, faster page turns, better battery, really good battery life. And then the most interesting announcement, the new Kindle Fires. There are three new Kindle Fires. There's a 7-inch Fire, which will be out in just a few days, actually the 14th, I think. That's 5 days from now. There'll be a 8.9-inch Kindle Fire, closer to iPad-sized Kindle Fire. That'll be available about a month from now. And then in November, there'll be a Kindle Fire 8.9-inch with LTE, with its built-in cellular connection. Not for phone. Some people thought Amazon might announce a new phone, but no, they didn't. Just for data. But these are really interesting devices, mostly because they're high-end, powerful devices and cheap. I mean, really cheap. Very interesting. The 7-inch, and by the way, I've ordered both, and I should have the 7-inch on September 14th. So in time for next week's show, and I'll talk about it. The 7-inch starts at $200 for 16 gigs of memory. Another $50, you get 32 gigs of memory. Very high-res display, 1280 by 800. That's HD quality. It's an IPS technology, which is a very good LCD kind of screen. And at that resolution, at that size, it's very close to the resolution of the iPad. I would say it qualifies as what Apple calls a retina display. That is a display that when used at a normal distance, you can't see the pixels at all. It just looks, and they look beautiful. It'll be the first tablet to ship with dual-band, dual-antenna Wi-Fi, 2.4 gigahertz and 5 gigahertz. Microsoft has announced the Surface will have that as well, but this is going to come out before the Surface does. Dual-core 1.2 gigahertz processors with very fast graphics capability. And then, most importantly, from the point of view of Amazon, it's a portal to the Amazon TV, movie, music, bookstore. And I think that they've done some things that are directly aimed at Apple, besides the price, which is clearly aimed at Apple. They're going to have multiple accounts so that if, you know, different people in the family use it, the kids have one account, you have another account, that keeps the kids from looking at your content and vice versa, lets you have parental controls. They're going to have good parental controls. That's something the original Fire did not have. This should be a very exciting product. Of course, I'll reserve my opinion until I try it, but dual speakers, for instance, with Dolby sound, that's something the iPad doesn't have. They're aiming it right after the iPad. But the difference is this is not a content creation device. It's not powerful enough, I think, to edit movies or, create music, which a lot of people do with the iPad. It's really for watching TV, movies, listening to music, and reading books. But I think it's going to be stellar at that, and boy, what a good price. What a good price. It's a competitive market now. You've got the Google Nexus 7. You've got this device, and I guess we'll have an iPad mini. It'd be very interesting to see how Apple prices that small iPad. when it comes out. There's some pressure now. There's some pressure on Apple. If Apple can come close, and I don't think they have to meet it, but let's say they're $50 more, they'll be fine. But if they can't come close, it's going to be tough. And one of the reasons Amazon might have a little advantage here is that things are changing. It isn't about hardware anymore. Even Jeff Bezos, the chairman of Amazon, said this at the announcement. He said, look, we're not trying to make money on the hardware. We want to make money when you buy stuff from Amazon. So we can charge less for the hardware. We're not a hardware company. We're a store. And that's something only Amazon can say. Although I have to say, if you've been watching what Google, Apple, and even Microsoft have been doing in the last year, they've really been refocusing themselves so that they can sell content. They're trying to build ecosystems. Apple did it first, I think, woke up everybody by having the iTunes store and then the Apple TV. And Apple's even now talking to cable companies and cable content creators like HBO, trying to get them in the fold. It turns out content now is more important. Not software, not hardware, content. Games, TV, movies, music, and books. And who has the lock on that? Who's going to make the most money off a tablet? It's Amazon. They'll even use it to sell you a dishwasher if you want. Physical goods. They've got the store. So that gives them a little leg up over all these other guys, and it means that they can charge less. I imagine they're at best breaking even on these devices. They might even be losing money on them. They don't care. They're going to make the money after the fact. This is what game console manufacturers have been doing for years, Nintendo and Sony and, Microsoft with its Xbox. They essentially sell these products at cost or even less and know they'll make it up in the cut they take of each and every game that plays on these devices. Nintendo invented that business many moons ago. So I think we're in a very interesting time where devices have gotten less and less expensive. Amazon is being very aggressive here. And my suspicion is they're going to eat away some of Apple's audience. I'm excited. I bought one. Of course, I'll buy everything. I'll buy anything. I have no taste. It's my job. If you want to talk about it, 8888 Ask Leo. There's new Nokia phones. I mentioned that last hour. What do you think the new iPhone will bring? When will they announce new iPods? What will they be priced at if they get it? If Apple announces a 7.85-inch iPad mini at, say, $250, well, they're going to have to drop the prices of the iPod Touch, aren't they? What will they charge for those? We could talk about it. 8888 Ask Leo. The website is techguylabs.com. You can also go into our chat room where the conversation rages hot and heavy. There's a link to that chat room at the website, techguylabs.com. I'd love to know what you think. Are you going to go out and buy this Amazon Kindle? Are you waiting to see what the iPad mini does? Maybe you're going to buy the Nexus 7, the Google tablet. That's been the amazing low price leader for the last month, but boy, these things move fast. You can't own the market forever, and now Amazon's in there. I should have one by next week, and I'll let you know how it competes. You can't beat the price. I mean, we're talking less than half what an iPad would cost. Less than half what a comparable iPad would cost. Of course, there's no iPad with a screen that small. I like 7-inch screens. I think there's something to be said for them. I got a Nexus 7, the Google 7-inch tablet, and I haven't really used my iPad that much ever since. We shall see. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Let's talk. Your call's next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, those Muppets. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo's a number. A couple of people asked in the chat room during the break about the 3G or 4G plans on the Kindle Fire. It's not a good deal, in my opinion. In fact, the original Kindles with 3G were a great deal. WhisperNet, Amazon called it. And it allowed you to download books over 3G for free for life. Which was, you know, you can't knock that. It was built into the price of the device. That is not what they're doing with the Kindle Fires with 4G. They're giving you, for $50 a year, so there is a subscription fee of $50 per year, 250 megabytes a month. That's not one TV show. That's 15 minutes of high-def video. It'll be all right for books, but that's all. How many songs is that? Maybe 25 songs? It's a couple of CDs. It's okay for books and maybe a little bit of music, but that's all. And the sad thing is, I think people are going to say, ooh, I get, you know, $50 a year and I get a lot of bandwidth. And what's going to happen is they're going to quickly go burn through that 250 megabytes and then pay the overage fees, and it'll end up costing you more than an iPad, which is $20 to $30 a month. So I don't think that's such a good deal. You know, why, if you do mostly Wi-Fi and you just use the 4G for an occasional, like, oh, I'm at the airport and I really want to watch 15 minutes of Mad Men. Okay. I really want to watch, you know, the first quarter of a Netflix movie. Okay. But other than that, I don't think it's a good idea. I really don't think it's a good idea. Now, PC guy's saying, and I don't know if this is the case, that they will not charge you overages. They'll just turn it off. If that's the case, it's worthless. Wi-Fi is free if you have a Wi-Fi access spot or access to one. You know, most people in the U.S. use a internet service provider called Linksys. Works really great. Raymond, Thousand Oaks, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, how you doing, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. I had a question. I'm running a Dell desktop with Windows 7 Home Premium. Mm-hmm. And someone told me that one way to get a better response time on the computer was to free up space on your hard drive.
Well, that's not true unless your hard drive's really, really full. How much free space do you have on your hard drive?
I don't know. What I did was I got me an external hard drive of a terabyte, and I put a lot of gigabytes on there, but it wasn't any faster.
No. It's only going to slow your computer down if you've got like 100 megabytes left, and even then it might not. I don't know why they said that. That's not an issue. It's not good to have a very full hard drive for a lot of reasons, but that's not the issue.
Okay.
Maybe they meant more RAM. Maybe they didn't mean more storage. They might have meant more RAM.
Ah.
You understand the difference. Storage is hard drive space. RAM is the very fast memory the computer stores the operating system and programs and data in. And if your computer came with 1 or 2 gigabytes of RAM for Windows 7, that's the minimum. You'd do a lot better with 4. How much RAM do you have? Do you know?
I think I have 1 gig.
Yeah, that's okay. That's what they were talking about. So it's the good news is if it's a desktop, even if it's a laptop, it's usually not very expensive to upgrade. 4 gigabytes should cost you under $100. Go to one of the RAM sites. The best way to buy RAM is to go to Crucial.com or Kingston.com. Both of those sites have RAM pickers where you'll enter in exactly the model of the computer you've got, and they'll sell you because different computers use different kinds of memory. They'll sell you the right kind of module. In most cases, they'll have videos there that show you what's involved. You should look at that and make sure you're comfortable doing the addition. It's pretty easy on most systems. Laptops, a little trickier. A little trickier. But yeah, 1 gigabyte, Raymond, even on Windows 7, which is very fast, is pretty low. You know, people often talk, and mostly talk, about the speed of their processor, as if that's the speed of the computer. It's not. It's a part of it, but the computer is as fast as its weakest link. In fact, when you, on your Windows 7, you know, you can run the Windows Experience checker. And just type Windows Start and type Windows Experience and run that, And what it does is it tests all the subsystems. How fast is the hard drive? How fast is the video? How fast is the processor? How fast is the memory? And then gives you a Windows Experience score based on all of the above. But it'll show you individual scores. And usually the overall score is close to the lowest of the five different scores, four or five different scores. Because if the RAM is really slow or there's not enough of it, that's going to slow everything else down. If you only have a gigabyte of RAM, your computer is going to spend a lot of its energy moving stuff into and out of memory instead of calculating, thinking, processing. Similarly, if your hard drive is slow, the CPU could be really fast, but it's going to sit there waiting and waiting and waiting for data to come up off the hard drive. That's one of the reasons people speed up computers with SSDs, solid-state drives. These are drives that are much faster than spinning drives. They don't have any access time, and usually read times are really fast. And that by itself can make a huge difference in the performance of the computer. So the computer is really a system, and the speed of the computer is a holistic system, a number that reflects all of the subsystems and how they perform. Not enough RAM is certainly a big one. I'd say actually maybe the most important is the speed of the hard drive. Boy, you tell you, you put an SSD drive, even in a computer with a fairly slow processor, as long as the bus, the channels that transfer data inside the computer are fast enough to keep up with the hard drive, you could see a huge improvement in speed. Huge improvement. So what is a good Windows Experience benchmark number? I'd say 5 or higher. Would you agree, Fraser? You can't get much higher than 7 or 8. That's a really fast system. But if you're seeing 2s or 3s, that's a pretty slow system. You'd like to see around, 4 better at least. Most systems that I've seen that are modern systems with good components, 5.5 or better. And adding more RAM might make a difference. Absolutely. The people in the chat room are sharing their Windows Experience numbers. I've got 7.1. I got 5. Nobody under 5 in our chat room. We got sophisticated users. But adding memory is easy, and you could probably do it yourself, Raymond. It's worth it. It's fun. Feels good. Douglas in Appleton, Wisconsin. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Douglas.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. Say, I want to do like a podcast, and I purchased a Audio Technica AT2020.
Oh, what a great mic. I love that mic.
Yeah, if Father Robert Ballen.
yeah, he likes it too. Yeah, he's a podcaster on our network, yeah. Hang on, Douglas. I'll get to you right after the break. We got to take a break for the bottom of the hour. Oh, did I hang up on him? You still there? Hang on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Kyle Benham is our musical director. Kyle performs the hits, or picks them anyway, and puts his playlist up on his Google Plus account, Kyle, K-Y-L-E, space, B-E-N-H-A-M, or just go to techguylabs.com after the show, and we'll have the Funky Town playlist available for you there. 8888-ASK-LEO, we were talking, did I lose him? I guess I did. We were talking to a caller who wanted to do a podcast, and he was asking about the Audio-Technica ATR2020 mic, which is a very affordable mic, around $60, that has USB, but it's a good Audio-Technica mic, a great choice for podcasting. However, as is often the case, if you use a headset or a USB mic, it's one person. If you want multiple people, if you want to have a studio round table, if you want a co-host, you need two mics. Well, I guess you could, if you like your co-host a lot, you could share a mic. But if you don't, you need two mics, and that gets more complicated. Then you need to get a mixer. If you're going to use Skype, that gets even more complicated. So you can absolutely get more complicated with this. My suggestion is if you want to look at an inexpensive solution that allows you to do multiple voices, to take a look at the Behringer Podcast Studio. Behringer makes good, inexpensive audio gear, and they have two different packages for podcasters that make it possible for you to do multiple voices. Joanne is in Ventura. Hi, Joanne. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, I don't know if you remember me from the Amazon Institute, the vintage Mac user that you helped out this past summer.
I hope I helped you right.
You helped me so right that, you know what? Somebody made an anonymous donation on your behalf for saving me all that money because you gave me such right on advice.
Oh, wow, that's great. Well, what is the? Tell me about the charity again.
Well, my foundation is the Amazon Institute. Sometimes people confuse it with Amazon.com, but believe
me. Yeah, I know the feeling. You know, my podcast network's called Twit. And I guess, you know, after I started it in 2005, this other company came along called, I think, Twitter. And it confused the heck out of people. Yes. So,
yeah, well, the Amazon Institute doesn't have very deep pockets. So your IT help is just golden. This summer you told me, go and replace on my MacBook, the white one. You said, go here, get this. You know, you can do it yourself. The hard drive is done. I listened to you. I'm not an IT person. Perfect. Now I have something that's not vintage. I think it might be Mac antiquity. My G4 is not starting up. And somebody said maybe it's a little PRAM battery or something, or it's the motherboard. Now, save me more money, Leo. Tell me what is going to be cheaper to do. Not fix it or
there comes a time in every computer's life where it is better to euthanize it than to fix it.
Right.
You know, it's not a good idea to pour money into something that is really obsolete. And the problem with the G4 Macintosh is that Apple stopped supporting that architecture 8 years ago? They started using Intel chips. So no new software and no new operating systems will run on that G4.
But it's such a workhorse.
Oh, I love it. And as long as you don't want to do anything from this century on it, you'll be fine. No, you understand what I'm saying?
If
you
run a SAP
program,
I do.
The problem is that now you say, oh, I want to use Chrome. Uh-oh.
Oh, no, I'm not going to say that.
Because you can't run, there. You could run a really old version of Firefox.
Right.
You could run the Safari. I think Safari came with OS X in those days.
Yes,
you could
it
run
did.
Safari.
I'm running 10.5.8 on it, believe it or not.
Yeah. Wow. Good for Apple. Yeah. They kind of kept it alive.
They
so, but that's the last update you're going to be able to do.
That's right.
Yeah.
So what do I do?
Say it won't start. When you say it won't start, what does that mean?
I've done all the diagnostics from, you know.
You turn it on and do you see a blinking question mark with the computer in it or?
Nothing.
Nothing. The screen doesn't light up. Nothing. Do you hear any sounds coming from the interior?
Not a peep.
Okay, so here's the deal. Something is dead. It could be the power supply. It could be the... Is it a laptop or a desktop?
It's a laptop, and I already did the diagnostics for the power supply. Power supply is good.
How are you able to do diagnostics?
Because I asked a friend of mine at the Apple store what I should do, and I brought actually in the power cord into the store, and he helped me out. So now
He looked at the cord, but he didn't look at the laptop.
Well, no, because it just won't do anything.
Here's the problem. To get them to look at it, it's going to cost you $150, $200. You could buy a new G4 laptop for $50.
I could?
Oh, yeah, if you could find somebody selling them.
Exactly.
Because it's not worth anything. It's literally from the previous century. Literally.
Yeah, okay. So okay.
Literally. I mean, it's last... That should tell you something. It's from a previous, not decade, century. So, you know, the power cable is not the problem, but it could be the power supply inside it. It could be the motherboard. It could be the hard drive. It could be something really simple. It could be something really expensive. But nobody's going to look at it for less than $150. It's not worth even that. So now I understand you're a nonprofit. You don't have money to go out and buy a new one. So I would try to get something newer but used. Apple does have a good outlet store where they sell as good as new Macintoshes for several $100 less. A Mac Mini, maybe a used refurbished Mac Mini, might be a good choice for you. In fact, that'd be a great choice for you. Let me see. The chat room just checked prices on eBay for a PowerBook G4. Oh, it's worth $140, exactly $10 less than it'll cost you to take a look at it. And I wouldn't recommend. I would actually would not recommend buying a new G4 or a used G4. It's just not worth it. It's just not worth it. There comes a time in every computer's life where it's time to put the pillow over it and hold it till it stops kicking. Actually, it already stopped kicking, didn't it? Maybe it's time to find a hole in the ground and throw it in there, because I feel bad, but I think it's... Now, getting your data out is another matter. If there's something on that hard drive you want, you do need to spend some money. Somebody can pull that hard drive out of the computer, somebody at the Apple store, connect it up to another computer, and pull off your data. It could very well be that the hard drive just choked. I mean, the hard drives wear out. It could be a very inexpensive part to replace, but it isn't going to be cheap to get it fixed. It's not going to be worth fixing it. It's got sentimental value perhaps, but at this point it's gone. It's a dead parrot. It's gone. I'm sorry, Joanne. I wasn't able to help you on this one. Monty Python's Flying Circus. And that's one dead parrot. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Last few minutes of the show. Let's see how many calls I can get in here. Starting with Victor in Valencia. Hello, Victor.
Hello, Leo. Great taste in comedy. That parrot is long dead.
Oh, long gone. Yeah. It is a deceased parrot. No, it's not. It's pining for the fjords.
Pining.
Pining.
I've listened to you for a long time, and I got to say, you really helped my hour-and-a-half commute with that podcast. It's
gone. Oh,
long.
Thank you. You have my sympathy. That's a bad commute.
Well, it means a lot. We just upgraded to Mountain Lion on the Mac, and do you have any recommendation for any DVD copying software to back up any DVD that you purchase, that you want to back up onto a DVD and not so much rip it so that it goes on and stays on the computer or you can play?
You want to make a copy. So Handbrake, which of course is the program I'm sure you know about, I always recommend.
I have that, but we used to use Mac the Ripper, but it doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, it's gone. It's a dead parrot.
Is it?
let me think. Mac the Ripper is long gone. Part of this is that the Motion Picture Association of America is pretty aggressive these days, going after companies that make software that can rip DVDs. Because, of course, DVDs are copy protected, and it is illegal to make a copy of the DVD. The Digital Millennium Copyright Act does not allow for what would seem an obvious use. You own these DVDs. You want to make a backup in case something happens to them.
Correct, correct.
Now, I got to tell you, no judge in the land would convict you of such a thing. You know, I mean, that's despite the fact that it's against the law. It's ridiculous. However, the making software to allow you to do that is pretty much kind of frowned upon, and the Motion Picture Association goes after people. So I'm just looking at some other choices. One person's recommending Ripit from the little app factory.com, and I have used Ripit. I like it. DVD Fab is another one people are saying. The chat room has a number of recommendations. DVD Cloner for the Mac. These are not free.
Right.
This is interesting. DVDFab.com makes a Mac product for $45. That removes copy protection to copy any DVD into any blank DVD disc or the hard drive. Looks like it's not re-encoding. What you don't want to do, what Mac the Ripper did not do, but Handbrake did, is re-encode. You just want to keep it and make another DVD out of it.
Correct.
You know, I hope somebody's writing down. James DeRuvo, who does our show notes, I hope you're writing down these recommendations. There's quite a few. Yeah, scrolling by me in the chat room here.
Oh,
There's one called MacDVDRipperPro.com, which sounds like they're going after the Mac the Ripper market. I agree with you. Mac the Ripper was the product.
Yeah.
MacDVDRipperPro.com. The easiest DVD ripper for the Mac. Hey, the good news is they have a try it before you buy it. It's $19.95. Hey, this looks like the program. I have not used it. I gave up on DVDs a long time ago. But I know there are a lot of people. In fact, I actually shouldn't say I gave up on DVDs. I just bought 20 Woody Allen movies. So, and they're on DVD. So I think I do need this. This looks pretty good and recommended by Spider and others in our chat room. Mac DVD Ripper Pro. You could try before you buy, and the price is right, $20. I guess that's the answer, Victor.
That's the answer, Leo. Thanks for everything you do. It's a great show, and keep it up.
My pleasure. The chat room is a great resource. Gotta say, thank you, guys. I'm going to download that right now. I'm very interested. Scott in Wisconsin, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Scott.
Hey, I just found your show today, and my computer is more like the guy from the Holy Grail saying, I'm not dead yet.
It doesn't want to give up the ghost, huh?
No, I affectionately call my laptop the Beast, and I've had it now since about 2008, and it's got an NVIDIA 8800M GTX graphics card in.
Okay.
And long story short, after, you know, trying to figure this thing out for a year, and including throwing my graphics card in the oven and baking it for a while, it seems like there's a design flaw in it where they didn't use the right underfill for the solder, which is not heat tolerant enough. So during the usage cycle, as the card heats up, it's developing microscopic cracks in there, and then it's causing things like screens to go blank or weird colors, or, you know, my system even locks up sometimes. And
wow.
I've got a...
Wow, that's bad.
Yeah. I've got a repair shop that says that they can do... they can reflow the solder connections.
Yeah. So what happened is this is... I think they're saying it's a cold solder. That's what you call a cold solder. It's poorly done. Although I would guess that these cards are made by robots by now. But maybe not. Maybe human hands. And a cold solder is a bad connection, and resoldering it will fix it. Reflowing the solder will fix it.
Okay, so that that takes care of the underfill and everything. They'd be able to use the, you know...
You bet. You bet. That's why baking it in the oven actually works, because you're trying to, kind of manually reflow the solder. How much do they want to charge you for that?
Well, considering I've already paid quite a bit for them to do unsuccessful diagnosis, they're saying that they'd be willing to do it for $100.
You could probably get a better card now for less.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean,
I've looked into that. I think the 290M, I think, is one that can replace it. But, you know, it's really, from what I've heard, not that much faster, but at least doesn't have...
All right. Well, no, re-soldering it... there's no guarantee. I'm sure they're not offering you a guarantee, but if it's a cold solder, and that's pretty typical of what happens, the device doesn't work until it's warm, usually means a cold solder. Reflowing it would fix it. It's probably not something, unless you're very good at soldering, you'd want to do yourself. But you could if you're good at soldering. It's not hard. You just have to redo it, basically. Wow. Apparently, that's not uncommon. Not uncommon. I always assumed that by now, you shouldn't have solder defects in a card, but maybe they made the early ones by hand. I don't know. Line 3, last call of the day, David in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Hi, David. I think we got about a minute left in the hour. What can I do for you?
I switched to Mountain Lion and used notes. It only sends a note to the note application. Whereas before, I was able to do notes on my iPhone, and it would show up on my email. I can't show up on email anymore.
They used to use IMAP for notes, and now they want you to sync.
Right.
Did
you get it to show up?
No, that's called intentional behavior.
Okay.
That's something Apple changed, I'm sorry to say.
Okay, because it was a great...
I know.
...phone, and when I checked my email, there it was.
You could just email yourself your notes. You know what? I would look at Evernote. It's free. It syncs. It's great. And it's really good. EVERNOTE. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.